Hi, I'm Greg from Omaha.
I'm Michael from Baltimore.
Hey, I'm Dave from Portland, Oregon.
The Sound of Young America is produced independently and supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to support the show like I did,
just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. One of our favorite guests on The Sound of Young America is the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton. The first time he joined us 5 years or so ago, he'd recently had his first child and celebrated the occasion by quitting his well-paid and very steady management job in the IT industry to pursue music full-time. For a year, he recorded a new song every week, recording them and releasing them for free on the web, and he built a following that made him, since then, become one of the most successful completely independent musicians in the world. He sells his songs, which can also be downloaded freely on his website. He hosts his own fan cruise, and he headlines shows in front of tens of thousands of screaming fans of a song he wrote for a video game and other shows. His fans even make their own videos for his songs, which mix the personal and the comic book absurd and find pathos and laughs in very far-flung and unusual subject matters. His new album, Artificial Heart, is in some ways his first. It's his first venture into traditional record recording, in a real recording studio, making an old-fashioned LP with a producer. It's a turn to the very traditional from a songwriter with a very unconventional career. Colton joins me from his home studio in Brooklyn, New York City, and also joining me from his home studio is the producer of the album Artificial Heart, John Flansburgh. Flansburgh, of course, is half of another rock act that isn't afraid to mix a little laughter in with their sincerity and aesthetic experimentation. They might be giants. Jonathan Colton, John Flansburgh, welcome back to The Sound of Young America.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jonathan Colton, you have had a really remarkable success with this odd kind of model, which is you just kind of have put out songs when you record them and given them away for free and also sold them, just sort of said, hey, you should buy this, although you can get it for free. And sort of occasionally collected them onto USB sticks and things like that. Why did you want to do the old-fashioned 1975, like, hole up in the Hollywood Hills with, Phil Spector style of recording a record?
Well, you know, I grew up with albums. I mean, I am still of the generation that's how you bought music, in album form. So I have many fond memories of, you know, staring at a bunch of liner notes and listening to songs in a particular order and a group of songs that captured what that band was doing at that time. It's a really nice form, I think. But I think more important was that I really felt like I needed a kick in the pants to do something that was challenging, creatively challenging, and maybe a little risky. I hadn't felt a lot of real creative risk in a while. So when I opened for They Might Be Giants, and John Flansburgh said to me at the end of our run together that he thought I should make an album and he thought he should produce it. I said, well, that sounds completely terrifying. And so, yeah, let's do it.
Let's hear a little bit of the opening track of the album, which is called Artificial Heart. This song is, I like it because it is so aesthetically different from the solo guitar home studio aesthetic of so many of your previous records. It's called Sticking It to Myself.
I'm right here, and I heard everything you said, those things to try and get inside my head.
Sticking
had no idea that this whole thing was your pitch to Jonathan. What made you think that you wanted him to do this real old-fashioned thing?
You know, hearing his recordings and seeing him perform live, just the actual musicality of his stuff was very dazzling to me. And I just thought, you know, there are not a lot of transferable skill sets that you get for being in a alternative rock band for 30 years. But producing is, I feel like, is one of them. You know, I felt like I could be of service. So, you know, just as sort of a sounding board and an editor and, you know, and help with the arrangements and just sort of navigate through the a more elaborate process. I mean, truth be told, most of the album or half the album is actually impossibly small productions. I don't think, you know, I wouldn't say any track is indicative of the whole album. You know, Sticking to Myself is a very, you know, has a lot of bluster to it and just a lot of hands on deck. But I think with this project, the idea was just to make every arrangement, every recording very specific.
John, I think that in your 30-year career as half of They Might Be Giants, you've sort of benefited from just kind of thinking of an interesting thing and then trying it out. I mean, just the past 10 years, your most recent record is sort of classic adult rock and roll alternative rock album, but you've had a bunch of albums that were very successful that were for kids that is something that was just like, I'm sure just one day the two of you were like, what if we made an album for kids?
Yeah, that was pretty much the gimmick. You know, we try things out. I don't think we necessarily invest as much in the ideas that we're trying out. You know, we never made CD-ROMs. So we dodged that bullet. But
you never hooked up with Voyager Interactive to make something for the CDI.
Yeah, exactly. So I think just being open to emerging technology is not necessarily as brave as it might seem from a distance. I guess that there are things about just generationally where I'm coming from that I just feel like it's important not to be too scared of technology, you know, too scared of what a lot of people in rock music are actually surprisingly, you know, they believe in black boxes, but they don't necessarily think that they can. There's a lot of backwards looking stuff in rock, to be sure. You know, it's a very orthodox kind of culture.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Jonathan Colton and John Flansburgh. They're old friends of the show who are working together. Flansburgh, who's in They Might Be Giants, produced Colton's new album, which is called Artificial Heart.
Wire and glass and stainless steel. Now I can imagine how I feel.
So, Jonathan, one of the things that is typical of your work and kind of unusual in the world of singer-songwriter-iness is that you often write from the perspective of a character, and you often write from, I guess, what I might describe as a premise. Is that
sure.
Right? Is that a fair way to describe it? Which is so weird in the world of sweet people with acoustic guitars, which you also are. It's very unusual to have that rather than just maybe writing from, I guess, a feeling, just happy or sad, lonely.
Yeah. Well, I find that writing from a feeling is. I mean, you know, look, what you're trying to accomplish is you're trying to communicate something that resonates in some emotional way with the listener. I mean, that's usually what you're trying to do when you're writing a song. And for me, you know, the moment I start writing Boy is Sad Because Girl Doesn't Love Him song, it starts to feel really inauthentic, even if it's true. Even if I'm writing something, you know, that's directly about me, if I frame it in that way, if I approach it in that way, it seems impossibly trite and meaningless. Whereas, you know, I learned somewhere along the way that when I started from a completely different direction, when I started with a crazy premise or with a hateful character or, you know, something that distracted me from the goal, I would end up gravitating toward something that was really authentic and true. So, you know, all the songs that I have about giant squids and mad scientists, you know, I'm sure are really about me. But I could never have written them if I had known that they were about me when I was starting them. So it's sort of a, for me, it sort of functions as a backdoor into authenticity.
I was listening to this song on the new album called Glasses, and it's a very personal love song in a way, but it also feels like it was, and you can tell me a little bit about how you wrote it, like it was maybe built around an idea of a little fragment of a thing that helped you find something that was about you.
Yeah, I mean, that song for me started with the line, "I like you in glasses," which just seemed like a very sweet thing to say to somebody. And, you know, I was thinking about, I had just had my 10th wedding anniversary. I had recently turned 40. Am I allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say that I turned 40?
Not on the Sound of Young America, my friend.
On public radio, you're not allowed to say that you're younger than 40.
Oh, good. Oh, so I'm just now in. That's good. So, you know, I had been thinking a lot about milestones and, you know, measuring my actual day-to-day life against some imagined day-to-day life given those milestones. And, you know, thinking about the completely chaotic and bizarre life of a happily monogamous dad of two kids with a wife that he loves very much, but not enough time to do everything. And, you know, the fabric of a functioning relationship and family is really, really complicated. You know, it's sort of like if it works, it's a miracle. And you don't even really understand how it works. It's just all these little pieces of things, none of which you really planned or expected, and they somehow add up to something that is really valuable. So that's sort of what I was thinking about in that song. And yeah, it all came from glasses, because we all have to wear glasses now because we're old.
Let's hear a little bit of that song from my guest Jonathan Colton's new album, Artificial Heart.
Shed the days like skin, pray for evenings in, hold their hands in the street when you walk them off to school. A box too full to shut, a cardboard paper cut, the bleeding edge of a picture of your parents when they were cool. So much to say, I forget to start. There goes the day, fading as it passes. Forget the gray, let it fall apart. It's okay, I like you in glasses.
That seems like a theme on this record. It crops up a few times. The sort of the responsibilities and challenges and also comforts of being a real adult?
Yeah, I think that is not something that I intended to be writing about over and over again, but I think that is a lot of what ended up coming out of me. And it's, you know, at a couple of different points, John Flansburgh would say to me, you know, all these songs are kind of dark. You need some happy ones. I mean, you know, for this record, I just wrote the stuff that I wanted to write, like always. And it happens, I think it does happen to have come out a little differently. But, you know, I am still really, really excited and proud of it, because I don't know, it's from me. It's a very honest record, I think, and I'm really happy with it.
you know, seeing the album evolve over the year that you were writing it, one thing that struck me is that you kind of took the unreliable narrator quality of your previous work and sort of turned it on yourself in this kind of Philip Roth-like manner, where it, you know, the album could be called I, Jonathan Coulton, and it would be about as direct and authentic as a book called I, Philip Roth. You know, it is mysterious and unreliable in those ways. It's, you know, the characters that are in the songs are not necessarily, it has the what is that term, hand feel, they say that in Project Runway. It has the qualities of singer songwriter stuff, but it definitely is, you know, in that fourth dimension of Jonathan Coulton-ness.
John Flansburgh, as the producer of this Jonathan Coulton record,
I just like hearing you say it, Jesse.
Do you have a song on this album that you think it exemplifies that kind of distinctive, twisted perspective on the self?
I think the duet with John Roderick, the song, the Nemesis song, actually has got a kind of bridges the previous version, you know, Jonathan Coulton 1.0 with the new album.
It's an amazing smile. Even the suit has teeth. Everything flash and guile. Nothing underneath except a small black heart that no one sees but me. I've been watching. I can see you start to wonder. Could it be that you need me? Out to run you faster. Promise me you'll let me be the one, the worst of all your enemies. Pretending you're a friend to me. Say that we'll be nemesis.
More with Jonathan Coulton and his producer John Flansburgh when we come back. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the singer-songwriter Jonathan Coulton, whose new album is called Artificial Heart, and the producer of that album, John Flansburgh, who is also half of the band They Might Be Giants. So, Jonathan, I want to ask you about this thing that went down on the internet a couple months ago. And maybe it's old news in Jonathan Coulton world by now, but...
You mean the public radio fiasco?
Yeah, exactly. The great public radio fiasco. So the brilliant public radio producers at the public radio show Planet Money, or public radio production outfit and podcast Planet Money, did a story about the unusual way that Jonathan has built his career and some of the things that we've talked about in this show, and had two music writers on the program to discuss whether or not it was something that was replicable. And the piece, I know that I was kind of upset when I heard the piece, because it in some ways trivialized Jonathan's work. It was compared to the Snuggie. The central metaphor was the Snuggie, and is the Snuggie replicable? In that it's something that no one knew that they wanted or needed, but then they found it, and blah, 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 blah.
Well, this is what I thought about when I heard about this whole kerfuffle, because I know a lot of people were, you know, reacted very negatively.
And this is John Flansburgh, not the person who to whom this happened. Yeah.
No, it didn't. No, but it was upsetting to me just because it's, you know, Jonathan's album is coming out right now, and this is kind of the like background radiation to the whole project. But I feel like, just on behalf of songwriters everywhere, it's too easy to say, oh, you're just marketing yourself. Because the truth of the matter is, like, you can't market stuff that people don't actually respond to. Like, it doesn't matter how much money is behind it, how much, you know, how clever the vehicle is. The truth of the matter is, like, audiences are fickle. I think the amazing thing about Jonathan's career, when you look at it from a distance, is that he's had so much success without any extra stuff attached to it. Like, there's been nothing, no machine behind him. No, you know, we're not talking about like Justin Bieber, who appears to be viral, but it's actually like part of a epic marketing plan. It's actually much more direct than that. He actually has just written songs that capture people's imaginations and therefore are beloved.
I'll take that compliment. that sounds like an accurate assessment of it. I mean, you know, the thing that was disappointing about that was that they, you know, I think they focused on the subject matter as being a niche that, you know, which, this doesn't even make any sense. But well, who they kept saying like, ooh, who else is going to exploit this niche? Nobody.
You mean that it's like a novelty?
Yeah, the sort of novelty, maybe nerdy angle, that stuff, you know, and the, you know, which completely misses the point, which I think you said very well, is that, you know, the really anybody's goal who is writing songs wants to write songs that get people's attention. And there are a million different ways you can do that. And I have tried all of them, and some of them worked. And, you know, that's sort of where it stops. I think it was just those writers just sort of missed the point of what could have been a much more interesting discussion, I think, about, you know, the changing nature of the music industry.
Well, that in and of itself seems like a real 2002 kind of story to me. I mean, there is no music industry left except the internet. So what?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, too. And maybe that's why they went there, is they felt like that ground had already been covered.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a part of that, and you guys can correct me if you feel like I'm wrong, that these commentators were saying something like, both this is just a novelty and this is just for geeks, in a way that someone wouldn't say, you know, no one would say Bruce Springsteen is just for working class guys from New Jersey.
I think
Molloy,
the truth of the matter is, you know, hair metal bands suffer with being called hair metal bands. You know, a lot of people in music want to be taken more seriously, and they want to control the way people respond to them. And at a certain point, you know, if you're a mature adult, you just kind of let that idea go.
And I mean, I'm a guy who doesn't really even self-identify as a geek, but I still felt stung by that.
Yeah, the concept of geek has become so broad and so broadly applied, I think, that it's losing a lot of its meaning as a way of distinguishing one person from another.
Isn't like calling yourself a geek sort of the male cultural equivalent of dressing up as a sexy witch for Halloween for women?
Yeah, it is. I mean, all women dress up as sexy witches for Halloween.
Yeah, it's Halloween.
It's the go-to costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that you know, more and more geek has come to mean enthusiastic person who uses computers, and that's kind of all of us now. So, you know,
well, except for the deeply embittered people who use computers.
Well, there are a few. There are a few of them for sure.
John Flansburgh, again, is the producer of this record. I keep asking you to pick songs just because it feels less like I'm putting Jonathan in a situation where he's got to choose amongst his babies. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite song that is on this record that's funny, but the funniness doesn't come from jokiness?
Well, one of the first songs we worked on was this track called "Today with Your Wife," which is not in any way funny, and it is just a completely original kind of song. I guess the premise, just the title, "Today with Your Wife," is kind of jarring because you're thinking, well, that's kind of a inappropriate title. You know, he's obviously talking about somebody else's wife. But what's really great is that the song actually follows through on the idea. And it's not risque. It's just it really is just about the complexity of adult relationships.
I had a great time today with your wife under an awning. We had to stop there and wait for a while because it was raining. And we talked about you till the storm had passed through. You should have been there. You should have been there. It rained a long time. The kids didn't mind.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton, whose brand new album is called Artificial Heart, and the producer of the album, John Flansburgh, who's also half of the rock and roll band They Might Be Giants. They Might Be Giants, by the way, also have a brand new rock and roll album called Join Us.
Yes.
Jonathan, I keep asking for John to pick songs from your record for us to listen to. And so I feel like maybe I should ask, I'm guessing that you may have heard the new They Might Be Giants album. Do you have a favorite on it?
Absolutely. Cloisonné is a song that I think John wrote somewhere in the middle of one of my desperate stretches of trying to write songs when I felt stuck and petrified. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it happened somewhere while we were working on my record too. Is that right? Yeah, it was at the bitter end. The thing I love about it is how it's this, like, it's this, I don't know, it's this balloon from outer space, but it's incredibly compelling and catchy. And as a guy who was trying very hard to write songs at that point, the fact that I could almost picture the way this sort of slipped out of his head into his fingers, and I was very jealous.
Well, let's hear that song from They Might Be Giants' new album, which is called Join Us.
Mind your business, mind your business, mind your never shut Quonset Hut business. My craft is exploding, it's like I'm making cloisonné, choking on my dust with my three blind cats. You have a friend in law enforcement, don't go calling law enforcement business. Mind your business.
Jonathan, getting back to your record, there are a couple of songs here where where a vocalist is billed as featured, but you essentially turn over the vocals to guest vocalists, which is kind of an unusual thing. I mean, usually you just have the guest vocalist harmonize with you on the chorus or something like that.
Or do a rap in the middle or something.
Well, if it's MC Scat Cat, if you're lucky enough to get MC Scat Cat. And I wonder how it came to be that you wrote a couple of records that, I mean, there's a beautiful song that Suzanne Vega sings on the album called Now I Am an Arsonist that is essentially a song that you seem to have written for Suzanne Vega and then put yourself on because you remembered that your name is on the cover of the album.
I don't know where it came from. I think part of it came from John Flansburgh, to be honest. I think that he comes from this great band where there really are two distinct voices happening. So it was his suggestion to do that. I think it was probably the track Nemesis that we started with. And it just felt like a really nice way of breaking things up, making things more interesting, and also, you know, yet another way for me to sort of challenge myself to step a little bit outside of what I'm most comfortable doing.
Yeah, I mean, if memory serves, Now I'm an Arsonist was really written with the idea of Suzanne Vega's voice in mind.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
You know, she has such a singular sound. It just seemed like a really interesting challenge. I mean, I don't think I could... I wouldn't know how to crack that open, but I think the way you did it is very impressive.
Oh, I wouldn't know how to do it either.
I was just an acrobat high above the street, pointing at the ground, the empty sky beneath my feet, the perfect fall. No one could tell at all that it was killing. Just an astronaut floating on a spark, tearing up the atmosphere, burning down the dark as you fell in, the heat against your skin till it got too bright to see.
Did you ever consider just doing a Suzanne Vega impression?
That's kind of what I had to do while I was writing it. You know, I had to imagine that I was Suzanne Vega, which it's not the first time I've done that, Lord knows.
Did you have to cut a demo vocal, sort of like Eminem trying to do a Dr. Dre voice on one of those leaked tracks from the follow-up to Chronic 2001?
Well, not quite like that, but yeah, I did have to put it in a very high key and sing it in a very high voice, which felt very uncomfortable, and it was still... It was still, when we started, a little bit too low for her, I think.
Yeah. The Portal songs that you've done for that game, they're all sung by a female singer with a vocoder, a very heavy vocoder effect. And I have to say, I find the demos that you've done are incredibly charming to hear your kind of falsetto going through the vocoder. It's, to me, that's the hit.
Yeah. This was a triumph. I'm making a note here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction. Aperture science. We do what we must because we can. For the good of all of us, except the ones who are dead. But there's no sense crying over every mistake. You just keep on trying till you run out of cake. And the science gets done and you make a neat con for the people who are still alive.
Can you describe for me, thinking about, for example, those songs that you wrote for the Portal video games, which are the ones that I described in your intro as being, you know, bringing together tens of thousands of video game fans, which they have, maybe the most popular songs ever written for a video game. I don't know how significant of a distinction that is, but...
Well, when you see the YouTube clips, it's always, you know, 14 million hits or something.
Yeah,
really unknowable.
Crazy.
Kind of amazing and wild. And those are songs that are written for the narrative of the video game, and written for a character in the video game. And it happens to be these Portal games are very critically acclaimed, as you know, they're about as good as it gets in video game world. But I wonder if you could,
Jesse, it sounds like you want more out of the video game world. That you're not satisfied with the state of video games.
Weirdly, I am really satisfied with this video game, NBA 2K6, that I bought for $5 at the GameStop and is almost the only video game I play. I do play a good amount of it, though. I wonder if you could describe for me the feeling of starting with a job, starting with an idea you have, or a character premise, and finding something that you realize is actually about you.
It happens in varying stages, I think. I am continually going back and listening to stuff and saying, oh yeah, I guess that one is about me. You know, that happens all the time. But it doesn't always happen while I'm doing it. So if you go back to this is many years ago. There's a song called "I Crush Everything" about a giant squid who hates himself because he keeps crushing ships, and so he swears off ships forever. he can't keep his hands off them because he loves them so much, but he doesn't want to wreck them, and so he sort of exiles himself to the bottom of the sea. It's a very sad song that sounds like it's going to be very funny. I wrote that song in the midst of my struggle with whether I was going to continue having a day job as a software designer or quit to become a famous rock star. I really thought I was writing a funny song about a giant squid all the way through, and even after it was done. And only some time later did I say, oh, duh, that's about me wanting to quit my job.
I lie below. You float above. In the pretty white ships that I've been dreaming of. And I'd like to swim beside you, getting dizzy in your wake, getting close enough to touch you, getting brave enough to take you into my arms and bring you down to be with me. But I can't do that thing anymore. Can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything, and I crush everything, and I crush everything.
Jonathan, before we started this interview, you were offering me some friend thoughts about babies, because I'm actually on paternity leave, at least theoretically, and
doing a pretty good job.
What kind of father are you?
My wife had a baby about 2.5 weeks ago, and you wrote and recorded this song called "You Ruined Everything," which is maybe your most direct and literal song. There's no controlling metaphor. I guess the title could be seen as a little bit of a joke premise, but it is the most sincere song that I've ever heard you write in terms of literally being a reflection of you and your feelings. I wonder if you ever sit down to write and think, man, I wish I could just, you know, Joni Mitchell this thing out and just find some little feeling I'm having and explode it into a song without a metaphor or a character or a joke or even a clever phrase. Just pure feelings and the raw power of Jonathan Colton.
I think that every time I sit down to write a song. I don't know. I can't.
Do you think you think it too much, and that's why you have a hard time doing it?
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to be honest. It's hard to not immediately start thinking about what other people are going to think about what I'm saying. That's something I'm working on.
Well, I think we're lucky to have the beautiful and hilarious songs that you do write. So, Jonathan Colton, John Flansburgh, thank you so much for being on The Sound of Young America.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Jesse.
Jonathan Colton's new album is called Artificial Heart. John Flansburgh produced the album. He's half of They Might Be Giants. Their new album is called Join Us. And Jonathan Colton will be traveling the country with They Might Be Giants. You can find the tour schedule online at jonathancolton.com or theymightbegiants.com.
Despite my better efforts, it's all for you. The worst kind of cliche. I'll be with you tonight.
As Omar Khayyam wrote, fill the cup. What boots it to repeat how time is slipping underneath our feet? Unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday. Why fret about them if today be sweet? The only thing you have to fret about, friends, is that The Sound of Young America is over for another week. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Producer Julia Smith. Our intern is Colin Walczak. That's Colin with two L's for those of you keeping score at home. If you can't wait till next week for more of The Sound of Young America, be sure to visit us online at MaximumFun.org. You will find not only a podcast of this program and all our past programs, but also of our sister programs, like Jordan Jesse Go, which is sort of like The Sound of Young America, only with no interviews and a lot more vulgarity. If you have thoughts about the show, you can always email me at jesse@MaximumFun.org. jesse@MaximumFun.org. Okay, that's all. We'll see you next time on The Sound of Young America.